This week on Single Take, Zendaya and Robert Pattinson save the drama for you in the newest A24 release, and the Miroirs have three faces in the latest film from German director Christian Petzold. All that and more on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Daniel Barnes, film critic at large and at large film critic, living large. Today on Single Take, I'll be reviewing Christian Petzold's new film, Miroirs Number 3, starring his frequent collaborator, Paula Beer. A little later on, I'm going to talk about some of the films that will be debuting next month at the Cannes Film Festival. But first, we'll talk about the drama. And everybody, watch your fingers, because this take is piping hot right out of the oven. It's April 3rd, 2026. I just came out of the 8:45 a.m. showing of the drama. And I know what you're thinking. 8:45 a.m. show of the drama. How can I get your life? Well, you can't. You can't. There can only be one Barnes Yard. And I can't be defeated, except in single combat. And even then, it's a whole production. There's an amulet that honestly, more trouble than it's worth, really. But that's its own, the drama. As for the drama, Zendaya, Robert Pattinson, they're young, they're successful, there's a compatible hotness there. What could possibly go wrong?
All right, so before we got married, we did this thing where we said the worst thing we've ever done.
Okay. I'll tell mine if we all do it. Promise?
What did you do?
This doll.
Beer bottles and porn.
You left in there overnight.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing I've ever done.
Are you serious? I'm sorry.
I'm gonna order an Uber.
Emma, what the fuck? Am I sensing some nerves? Remember?
I'll read you the IMDb synopsis for The Drama. A happily engaged couple is put to the test when an unexpected turn sends their wedding week off the rails. The drama was written and directed by Norwegian director Christopher Borgli. You would know him from Dream Scenario. That's the 2023 film starring Nicolas Cage. I liked Dream Scenario quite a lot. I think it was a little underrated, maybe. I liked the mix of dark fantasy and bleak reality that he brought to it. Borgli found a humor. He found poignancy in situations that were neither funny or poignant. And that's what he's trying to do again here with the drama. Robert Pattinson and Zendaya, they are Charlie and Emma. He's a museum director in Boston. Cambridge. She has some sort of job in publishing, maybe, and they're getting married. Next week. They're 1 week out as the film opens. As I said, on the surface, match made in heaven. Seems like they have everything going for them. Perfect couple. And when the movie starts, they're telling their stories. They're to prep for their wedding toast. And these stories are all, you know, they're all your classic rom-com, meet cute type of stuff. But you can tell something's off. Like, all of these stories, they're not quite as cute as you might think. They all involve some sort of deception or a secret. Something's being withheld. And these are the foundational stories, the when we met, first date, first kiss type of stories. And the drama is about what happens when those things that are withheld come up, when those secrets and lies are revealed. And as the big day bears down upon them, Emma reveals the secret about her past to Charlie and another couple played by Mamadou Athi and Alana Haim. And I won't reveal it because you're going to want to go in cold to this one. But suffice to say, it changes everything. And it is not what you think. If you don't know, I'm telling you, it's not what you think. You don't know. But it destabilizes everything. Their impending marriage, their friendships, their work relationships. Of course, it's all wrapped up together as couples are. And Charlie and Emma, they really start questioning. They start panicking a little bit as the day gets closer and closer. And I give a lot of credit to Borgli for making this work, because once again, he has a film here that A, seamlessly blends reality with disturbing, oftentimes, fantasies or memories or blends of the two. And again, he is also finding humor and truth in a patently unfunny subject. Patently unfunny. I'm not talking about marital discord or couples fighting. That's hilarious. We can all agree on that. But I'm still going to tap dance around the reveal here, which does happen fairly early, end of Act One, kind of in the drama of the drama. And just say that no one who's sane thinks this is a subject for humor, honestly. Plenty of insane people do, absolutely. And yet here it is in this film. It has the pitilessness of a child watching an insect wriggle at the end of a pin. And yet at the same time, I found it funny and surprisingly non-exploitative in how it's dealing with the subject. Ultimately, I think the film is about, you know, what do you do when you know something about someone you never wanted to know, but you can't unknow it. You can't just stop knowing it. Well, you re-examine everything you think that you knew about that person, every part of your relationship. And the question is, what can and what can't you just get past, you know, for yourself or for other people? Because when you get with someone, you're getting with every part of them. When you make that commitment, you're getting with who they are, who they'll become, and who they were when they were a fucked up kid or an angry teenager or whatever. And somehow Borgli does all this with this really clever and yet not preciously clever use of memories and fantasies and visions that slice into the drama of the drama. Zendaya, I like her a lot. She's obviously a fantastic talent, but I will say that up to now, I felt that most of her performance have kind of lived on the surface. Felt to me like something guarded. The rivers weren't running deep for me as far as the acting goes. Didn't feel like it. It just felt like it was all sort of right there happening on the surface. But the drama is something else entirely. This is her most vulnerable work. It's her best performance. It's not guarded. It's not just attitude. She gets to some kind of dark, ugly, scary places and still manages to find something poignant and bizarrely relatable in the character after all. Again, even in this film that is intent on keeping you as a viewer consistently discomforted, consistently emotionally edging out of the room because you'd rather not, you know, hear what comes next. So Zendaya's fantastic here. Pattinson also does really good work. He's doing a lot of like comedic takes, double takes, and stumbles and stammers. It's a Hugh Grantish kind of performance in a way, but what's so amazing is how unfunny and not charming it is. It's like he's trying to do comedy in the least funny possible way, which I think is a kind of a neat trick, and probably he's not going to get enough credit for how good that is. What else? Alana Haim, I do want to single out her as she plays the bridesmaid. She's really, or the maid of honor, she's fantastic here. She's very horrified at what Emma reveals about her past, and that rift sort of infects every part of their life. Like I said, work is wrapped up with the relationship, and that's all wrapped up with the actual just event of the wedding itself. Hard to have a wedding when the maid of honor is boycotting you. And I think a lot of times we don't recognize performances unless someone is doing something that we perceive as outside of themselves, some sort of a transformation. But I think that Alana Haim, you know, she's not going to get a lot of credit because you know, might think, oh, well, she's just playing herself or whatever. But this is a really good performance with a lot of subtle shades. So I think great work by Alana Haim. All right, let's wrap this up and move on. Of course, I rate films on the bump it or dump it scale. If I don't think it's worth your time, I'm going to say dump it. Dump it into the trash, or at least dump it into your streaming queue when it's part of your subscription. If I think the film is worth your time and you should go check it out, I'm going to give it a bump it, and I'm giving it a strong bump it to the drama. It's not a film that I expect to be on my top 10 or even top 20 list at the end of the year, but It's a very strong film anchored by some great performances, a really good script and direction again from Christopher Borgli, a good score by Daniel Pemberton. It succeeds in a lot of ways. And so I'm going to say bump it for the drama.
Ни перед кем здесь извиняться не будет. Понятно?
Конечно, не будет.
Because your son is a fucking pussy.
What?
What? What? What? And did you not hear what I said? I said it's because your son's a fucking pussy.
Все, пошли.
And you are discussing hooker.
And your son hates you so much he married one to piss you off.
Listen up.
Yeah. Now your family's fucking trash.
Is this my scarf?
That was a clip from the 2024 film Anora, of course, Best Picture winner that year, and also Palme d'Or winner at the Cannes Film Festival. And I wanted to talk about that for just a second. You know, there's always film festivals going on. That's something that you should know. Even locally, the San Francisco International Film Festival is later this month. But I want to right now talk about the Cannes lineup, which was announced maybe just a week or two ago, and highlight some of the films that I'm excited about. Of course, every year this happens in May on the French Riviera there, beautiful Cannes on the La Croisette and blah, 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 blah. But what I'm more interested for the films and for, looking ahead to award season and what might be a contender. Last year's Palme d'Or winner, that was Jafar Panahi's It Was Just an Accident. That was one of my top five films of the year, nominated for the Best International Film Oscar. The year before that, it was Sean Baker's Anora, another one of my top films of that year, and it was the Best Picture winner at the Oscars in 2024. So what is piquing my interest from this year's lineup? Well, you got James Gray's Paper Tiger, starring Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, described as two brothers pursue the American dream but get entangled in a dangerous mafia scheme that terrorizes their family. That seems right in the wheelhouse of our guy, James Gray. His first film since Armageddon time in 2022, I believe that was. Maybe even more excited about Joel Coen returning with Jack of Spades, his first film since The Tragedy of Hamlet. This stars Josh O'Connor, contractually obligated to appear in every film ever made until the end of time. Also stars Frances McDormand, and it's described as an American Gothic mystery film. Intriguing. And we're finally going to get to see Terrence Malick's long, 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 long awaited and most likely just long biblical epic, The Way of the Wind, which retells several episodes in the life story of Jesus, played by Geza Rohrig. Film also stars Matthias Schoenhartz, Ben Kingsley, and Mark Rylance as Satan. He always gets that villain role, doesn't he? The movie was filmed in 2019. Just as a heads up, it's 2026 now. That was a long time ago. And Malick apparently, when he filmed the film, he filmed 5 hours of footage per day, ended up with over 3,000 hours of footage. What is that, like 120? It's like months of footage. Apparently, he's done editing. He's been editing since 2019. Apparently, he's done, almost done. Close enough. We'll see. It'll be his first film since A Hidden Life in 2019. So that's The Way of the Wind from Terrence Malick. We also have Pedro Almodovar returning with a new tragic comedy, Bitter Christmas, Bad Santa remake, maybe? I don't know. And Nicholas Winding Refn is bringing Her Private Hell. That's his first film since 2016. Stars Sophie Thatcher and Charles Melton. Drive My Car director Ryusuke Hamaguchi, he's bringing All of a Sudden, his French language debut. Yeah, he went there to France. I hear it's lovely. And the great Japanese director Hirokazu Koreeda, who won the Palme d'Or in 2018 for Shoplifters, is bringing two films to the festival this year. Prolific son of a gun. Sheep in the Box is a science fiction drama about a couple who welcomes an infant humanoid robot following the passing of their son. Sounds a little like AI, artificial intelligence, but I bet it's not. And he also has Look Back, a live-action adaptation of the 2024 animated film that is based on the one-shot manga of the same name. Me and Darcy, we just actually watched Look Back earlier this week or last week. Ah, that's a lovely movie. Can't wait to see Koreeda's version. He's one of my favorite filmmakers. And there's a new film by Asghar Farhadi as well. That'll be his first film in a while. And all the usual suspects of Cannes. You got the Romanian contingent with Mungu, Porumbo, and Radu Jude. New films from Nani Moretti, Werner Herzog, Pavel Polakowski, Bruno Dumont, Cedric Kahn, all the people who seem to have a film at Cannes just about every year. Which one will win the coveted Palme d'Or? Well, we're going to have to wait to find out. The festival is May 12th through the 23rd, and they give out the awards on the last day. So let's check back on that. Put a pin in it. Bing! And we'll come back in May and talk about the Palme d'Or winner.
Die junge Frau da drin hat wirklich unfassbares Glück gehabt. Und Sie sind verwandt?
Nein.
IMDb synopsis for Miroir number 3. After a car crash kills her boyfriend, piano student Laura is taken in by Betty, who witnessed the accident. Living with Betty's family brings comfort, but Laura starts questioning their intentions as time passes. Miroir number 3, and I know what you're thinking. Will I be lost if I have not seen Miroirs 1 and 2? No, you will not. Do not be misled by the numeral in the title. We are fully in a Leonard Part 6, Mickey 17, Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 type of situation. The title is actually a reference to a Ravel movement, and trust me, I've had a Ravel movement. It is not, it's just, I won't even talk about it. The film was written and directed by Christian Petzold, who comes from the 21st century Berlin School film movement. This is his 11th feature, but he didn't really start getting noticed until 2012 for Barbara, and especially 2014 for his post-World War II melodrama, Phoenix. Petzold, he doesn't impose a lot of style, visual style or narrative style. He's very observational. He's very deliberate, but he doesn't waste shots either. Yet he also slyly has more Vertigo references than Brian De Palma, who is really kind of an opposite type of filmmaker. Petzold's best reviewed film, like I said, it's Phoenix. It revolves around this woman who is seemingly reincarnated. Is it really the woman, same woman, long thought dead, or did she just kind of look like her and is assuming her identity? This is the fourth Petzold film in a row that stars Paula Beer. They've got a good, strong collaboration going. She plays Laura, seemingly a morbidly depressed piano player who survives a car crash that kills her boyfriend. We don't learn much about Laura before this inciting incident. We get the impression that, like I said, she's very depressed. There's the opening scene is her looking longingly at a river, like, you know, Virginia Woolf would look longingly at a river. So we're getting some dark vibes from her right away. We get the impression she's carrying secrets. She also seems pretty darn ambivalent about this boyfriend who died in the crash. And in the aftermath, she's taken in by Betty, a lonely older woman who is harboring some dark secrets of her own. And I won't give these secrets away because Petzl drags it out rather than doing what the drama did and get it kind of out of the way early. But you can guess it, really, and that's part of my frustration with the film. It's not that, oh, I guessed the twist or anything. I don't really care about that. But it just is, the film kind of moons around. Everyone's kind of, there's furtive glances and uncomfortable silences. And it's all pretty obvious, and I just wonder if he had skipped to the reveal sooner, which would be a more Hitchcockian way to go about it, to not hold on to the secret so long. And maybe the film would have had a little more substance, but besides, as I say, this quiet tension, these whispered conversations, and this sort of increasing squirming discomfort about things that aren't being said. And a lot of the most interesting stuff in the movie happens after the secret comes out. They're sort of forced to deal with it rather than just like a good solid hour of hemming and hawing and uncanny glances and things like that. This is my fifth Petzold film. I've seen everything from Phoenix now through to this one. And I don't quite get it. I've admired all five films. I've even liked all five films to some degree, but there's something I just can't embrace there. I don't know. I feel like his films are built around these ephemeral ideas that never really become solid. They're better as concept than as final product. The movies never become solid either. They're kind of wispy, even though they're dealing with weighty subject matter. And yet, I did think this is a film I was happy to have watched, and I would have no regrets about pushing play on his next film, even though, as I said, I'm still not quite there. I don't quite get it, and yet I'm still intrigued by everything that he puts out. So I'm going to go with a admiring but largely unaffectionate bump it to Muir's number 3, and I'm giving a much more enthusiastic bump it to The Drama, starring Robert Pattinson and Zendaya. That film opened today. It's playing everywhere. Muir's number 3 is just expanded throughout the San Francisco Bay Area, so check your local listings, if that's even a thing. And that's all I got for you on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes. But let me ask you this. Are you a fan of classic films, foreign films, art house movies? Check out the Cannon Fodder podcast. If you subscribe to this show right now, just hit that button. You'll get the Cannon Fodder podcast too. It comes out every 2 weeks. I co-host it with comedy legend Quirky McDonald. We review films from the most recent Sight and Sound Critics Top 250. Earlier this week, we released our review of The Night of the Hunter. Truly, I mean, that is one of the great films ever made. There's almost just no real argument against it. And coming up on April 14th, another pretty undoubtable one, we'll be reviewing A Touch of Zen. That's the 1971 Wuxia classic directed by King Hu. And stay tuned for more episodes of Single Take with Daniel Barnes. If you want to support me, you want to support Quirky, you want to support any of these endeavors, please visit daredaniel.com. Find support the show in the menu. Your support is so essential. We have a PayPal. You can leave a one-time donation, weekly, monthly. You can even do a yearly donation if that's how far out you plan your donating schedule. Your support is so essential now more than or at least the same as ever, and it is, as always, immensely appreciated. These movie tickets, they ain't free, people. Okay? Unless I buy them with my Cinemark rewards points, which I did, hardly the point. Until next time, I'm Daniel Barnes saying, woe unto hypocrites, and save me a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.